Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport from the Putney Exchange, Costa Coffee in the Putney Exchange, Putney, by myself, Catherine Whittaker, and our Singapore and Solihull correspondent, returned from both those climbs, David Law.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit perturbed that you've name-checked this coffee shop.
I live in David Law-esque naive hope of free coffee.
Yeah, well, we're sitting here with four cups in front of us, every one paid for by our Kickstarter backers. Thank you to
you all. Everyone are clad in pictures of Santa Claus, which I find a little bit premature on November the 6th.
I think it's magnificent, and I feel like bursting into song.
He looks like he's about to burst into song. Someone take that microphone away from him. David, you've been back from Singapore about 6 days, so you're about 1 week out of six into your jet lag recovery schedule. How's it going?
Yeah, not particularly well, I have to say. Let's leave it there. But
more of those chewy sweets.
I'm
for
not
David,
the best
please.
Company in the world at the moment. But anyway, tennis to talk about, lots of it, and not all of it very nice.
Not all of it very nice, no. So we had an agenda prepared as of last night. It led with the astonishing Jack Sock muscling his way into the European stranglehold on major and masters titles that there's been over the last 8 years or something, and winning the title in Paris. We were going to lead with that. We were going to talk about Nadal's injury and withdrawal. We were going to talk about Zhuhai and Andy Murray live. And then, David, then I'm tucked up in bed last night about 11 o'clock getting an early night in.
There's magic there.
In anticipation.
Magic the
of,
cat.
Podcast recording the next day. No, magic. Magic doesn't come. Magic and I are not on speaking terms. I thought I'd just check Twitter, David. I'll see what's going down. Which is obviously a fatal mistake to make. And I saw that there was a bit of a hubbub developing in Milan where the draw ceremony was taking place for the hashtag NextGen ATP finals. Now, if you haven't seen video or photos or heard about this, I mean, don't look at videos or photos, because what transpired was
unless you like being appalled,
horrifying. And to be honest, in the modern world, lots of people do like being appalled, but just don't. I'm going to try and read you a neutral account of what transpired in that draw ceremony, and because I'm sort of unable to form neutral words about it myself because I'm so incensed, I have resorted to what the BBC Sport website have put together, because you can always rely on the BBC for neutrality. Sort of. Yes, you can. More so than anyone else, probably. Anyway, a tennis player was asked to pull off a female model's glove with his teeth. Female models decided groupings by revealing letters hidden under their clothing. So he had all eight, or I think actually only seven of the eight, or eight, all eight of the Next Gen Finals players. And this was to decide which group, A or B, they were drawn into. Denis Shapovalov discovered he was in Group A when his chosen model pulled up a lace dress to reveal the letter A on her right thigh. That good neutrality in my voice there, David.
You're doing a good job.
South Korea's Hyung Chung was asked to pull off a model's glove with his teeth. I think you get the vibe of what's happening here. If you're thinking to yourself, if you haven't seen any footage of this, and you're thinking to yourself, it can't possibly be as bad as what I'm describing, because it's 2017 and who would do that? You are wrong, because it was every bit as bad as I'm describing. And by all accounts, from people that were there, it was significantly more horrifying in person. And to be honest, that's the only positive I can take from the whole thing, is just how united everybody watching and everybody that's subsequently seen it is in their horror and revulsion at it. That is a positive thing, because I honestly think you could probably go back as recently as 5 years and there wouldn't be the same unity of reaction to it. So I do genuinely take that as a positive. However, that is the only positive in a truly ghastly situation. And I could let my righteous anger flow through my mouth. But in fact, what I'm going to do is read out to you the response of one of our Tennis Podcast listeners, because she tweeted me with a letter that she composed to send directly to the ATP via their website. It's Vicky Spreadbury, and I just think this is all brilliantly put, and I can't put it better myself, so I'll just read out what she has had to say. She says, I would like to express my disappointment with the manner in which the ATP Next Gen Tour final, a draw, was conducted and the way it promoted the objectification of women. The use of models was at best unnecessary and at worst an unpleasant example of the way women are used in a purely ornamental fashion in the sporting world. Of all sports, tennis should be most aware of the skills and strength of women. Some of the greatest sportsmen in history are and have been tennis players. And the ATP and WTA can rightly congratulate themselves on the strides that tennis has made in terms of equality and the examples that at times it has set for other sports. Yet events like this are a grim reminder of how far we still have to go. To use women for solely decorative purposes was bad enough, but to ask these young men, and they really are young men, to make a choice between them as if selecting them at a cattle market was not just disappointing, but disgusting. What made this worse was that it happened at an event intended to showcase the future of tennis. Older players, men and women, have worked hard to redress some of the lingering inequalities in the sport and to tackle the kind of sexist attitudes that we saw on display in Fabio Fognini's foul-mouthed tirade against a female umpire and Ilina Stasi's offensive behaviour towards the GB Fed Cup team and a British journalist. However harshly the ATP deals with those kinds of incidents, it means nothing if it permits events like the Next Gen draw to go ahead in this misogynistic and outdated way. This is not the future of tennis that we want. It is not the future for tennis that anyone, fan, player, coach, official or ATP or WTA member, should be prepared to expect. I'm not sure whether the decision to stage the draw in this way can be laid at the feet of the ATP itself or the Italian Federation, and we will, of course, come on to that in a second. In either case, the ATP needs to take action, either to consider its own behaviour and take steps to do better, or to issue strict guidelines to individual federations about what is and is not an acceptable way to carry out an event. One of my three young daughters is a keen tennis player. When you allow this kind of objectification to take place so openly, you send a clear message to children like her. That message is that men play tennis while women stand about in evening dresses looking pretty. It's damaging, it's offensive, it's unacceptable, and in the current climate of sexual harassment accusations levied at powerful men, it's spectacularly tone deaf. I would like to see a public statement from the ATP addressing the issue and making a promise that we will not see anything like it again. Now, we have seen a statement from the ATP. It's been released just in the last half an hour or so, as we're recording this, and it reads thus, David.
It reads thus: from both the ATP and from Red Bull, the company that are sponsoring the Next Gen ATP Finals. And this is what it says. ATP and Red Bull apologise for the offence caused by the draw ceremony for the Next Gen ATP Finals. The intention was to integrate Milan's rich heritage as one of the fashion capitals of the world. However, our execution of the proceedings was in poor taste and unacceptable. We deeply regret this and will ensure that there is no repeat of anything like it in the future.
So, it is a promise or a pledge that we won't see anything like it again, which I think is really positive. I personally feel revulsion at the phrase, which seems to be sort of just standard apology, public apology parlance now, of we apologise for the offence caused. That is apologising for the consequences of an action and not for the action itself. They are certainly not alone in using that turn of phrase, but for me, it really, really strikes the wrong note, that particular turn of phrase. However, they do seem to realise the gravity of the error, which I think is good, and they certainly seem pretty genuine and hardline in their pledge to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yes, and I think from the people I've spoken to, and I've spoken to some people that were there who are close to the event, who were able to give me a little bit of background as to how this came to be, this ceremony, it seems that the reaction and the ultimate revulsion and was immediate on behalf of quite a few people there. I don't think it was sort of just reactionary to the reaction on social media, although I would imagine partly so. Certainly the extremity of the statement and the immediacy of it, I think, probably is a result of how many people have said this is just not on. From my understanding is, and I think it's important to say this, the Italian Federation were not responsible for that particular ceremony.
They've made that pretty clear, haven't they?
Yeah, they were very quick to say that, and that has been backed up by people close to the event that I've spoken to. My understanding is that Red Bull staged this particular ceremony. They are new to tennis, and obviously they're investing a lot of money, etc., and are very warmly welcomed to the sport on a number of levels as a result of that. That having been said, this is just a spectacular misjudgment on a number of levels. Both, I don't quite know where they're coming from in their aim to integrate Milan's rich heritage as one of the fashion capitals of the world. If that's your idea of how to do it, then I just don't get it. I think you've got it horribly wrong. And I think the other question being asked by Vicky and by a lot of people out there is, how can the ATP have allowed this to go ahead? How can somebody not have said, no, you can't do this. This is not on. This is not what we should be doing. Well, my understanding is that they had very little sight of that in advance and were probably as shocked as everybody else. Now, that in itself is a problem because it is the next gen ATP finals. Therefore, they will know that they need to have better vetting procedures in place. If they don't stage this thing independently themselves without anybody else's input at all, then they need to have a strong say in exactly what it does, because ultimately it's under their name and this is the consequence of it. So the hope is that lessons have been learned from it, and from the sound of that statement, I think the full realization of why this is not on is there. But it's a concern.
It's at least being treated with the gravity it deserves. It's not being sort of shrugged off as a minor misstep or a minor misjudgment.
Which we've seen at times.
We have, all too often.
Not necessarily by them, but with certainly others.
Perhaps that's another minor positive to be taken. What I would say, the only reaction I've seen to it, which has perturbed me a little, is people sort of suggesting that it was the way it was done that was most problematic. You know, it was trashy. If the concept had been executed in a more classy way, i.e. if sort of the women were wearing slightly less revealing clothes, but still there in a purely ornamental and decorative sense, that would have been more okay. It wouldn't have been. There would probably have been less outrage about it, and I would be probably shouting more at a brick wall. But, for me, that misses the point, and the point is that it's just wrong and completely inappropriate and completely misjudged. And, it's 2017. It's just not okay.
Do better.
Do better. Incidentally, it was a draw. Should I tell you?
Oh, yeah. Who's in the draw?
Who's in the draw? Gianluca Quinzi, who is the Italian playoff winner, is in Group A alongside Hyung Chung of peeling off glove with teeth fame, Denis Shapovalov of revealing the letter A under woman's dress fame, and Andrei Rublev of US Open quarterfinal fame. And Group B features Karen Khachanov, Borna Choric, Gerald Donaldson, who's poor face during that draw ceremony was deeply uncomfortable.
It was, because incidentally, I little plug for another podcast here, but John Wertheim's Sports Illustrated tennis podcast, he did a 40-minute interview with Gerald Donaldson just over a week ago. Very, just an interesting chat. I mean, this guy is basically just focused on tennis and little else, it would appear to me. He seems like I've met him at Queen's. He seems
Ernest.
Like a lovely guy.
Word, isn't it?
Yeah, he
Sweet.
Is. You know, he wouldn't upset anybody about anything. He just keeps himself to himself. And I can just imagine how mortified he would have been at this whole process.
Well, good. That's the appropriate reaction. Well done, Jared. We assume that you've responded appropriately to the horror that was all of that. Anyway, and Andrei Medvedev makes up. No, wrong Medvedev.
Yeah, you're
I've
talking
gone
about
back to
1993.
Yeah,
Andrei
which is,
Medvedev.
You know, probably
which
where
one's this Medvedev?
Where that ceremony belongs. No, 1923. This is Daniil.
Yes, no relation, I don't think.
No relation. We've been through this before.
Andrei Medvedev
we?
Is a good player.
He was. We never talk about him, do we?
Oh, he's so
tennis
good.
Podcast,
he was fun as
Andre
well.
Medvedev special coming to you.
He was a good laugh.
At an appointed time. And now we will talk more about the next-gen finals because there's all of the rule changes that they're trialling, and David, debate starter David, has been having various kicking off discussion on Twitter.
Can we talk about that now?
Do you want to do that now?
Just quickly.
Poor Jack Sock is being shoved down the running
Jack
order.
Will understand. He's already at the
All right,
O2.
Let's
he's
do it. Now,
happy.
Shall I read out what the rule changes are? Just because I know we've done it before, but there are so blooming many of them, David.
Well, I think that's what created the debate. I got more than 140 replies to just listing
and
what the changes
were. And people are just
were.
Realising how many things are being thrown at the wall.
Yeah.
So no line judges. Hawkeye for all calls. Best of five sets, but four games in each set. Tie break at three all. Sudden death juice points, so no ads. No service let, so play continues as it would if there were a midpoint let. Each match starts 5 minutes from entry of second player onto court. Visible shot clock is in place to ensure 25-second rule between matches, between points. 25 seconds between matches, crikey. Between points is enforced. Maximum of one medical timeout per player per match. End of set coaching via headsets to coaches. Fans can move around during a match. Brackets except at baselines. So, should we just go through them very quickly and give our brief thoughts?
Go on.
Okay, number one, no line judges. David Law.
I slightly lament the passing of line judges if that's the way we're going, because I just love the human interaction. I mean, that's I still think back to our show, if you want to go and have a look at the archives of the Tennis Podcast, when we had Andy Roddick as a special guest, who was one of the biggest proponents of Hawkeye technology being brought into the sport. He felt it's time, you know, we can't have massive titles being decided on somebody's dodgy eyesight. You know, we need to have line technology to call the lines. And he said in retirement to us, Catherine, he said, I think Hawkeye has done everything that we've asked it to do. It works wonderfully, and I think we should get rid of it. And the reason he thought we should get rid of it is because you don't get any rows on the court anymore. You don't
you do.
No, but you wouldn't have John McEnroe in the way that we remember him if you had line call
I don't know, tell that technology. To Fabio Fognini.
I suppose that's true.
I just don't think it's solving a problem. That's my view. Like, I mean, but I can't get that worked. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think getting rid of sort of all humanity
your
from
brother,
the officiating
your wonderful
process.
Brother Matthew did point out in response to this debate, he was having a chat with Stephen Gregg, another one of our listeners, and who said that I'd argue Hawkeye for all points solves the problem of incorrect line calls. And your brother Matthew said it would have avoided the moment of victory being slightly blunted in the Australian Open for Federer and Wimbledon for Muguruza this year when the winning shot was appealed to Hawkeye.
It's true. That is always a shame. It is, yeah. But then we're just getting into a debate about whether Hawkeye is a good thing, aren't we? Which is not what we're debating here. We're debating whether Hawkeye should be
all-encompassing. I've pretty much come down on the side of the fence of I'm glad they're trying them all out.
Yeah,
I'm just not sure whether they should all be tried out all at the same time.
Best of five sets, four games in each set, tie break at three all.
Can't say I like it. I feel uncomfortable. I'm just so used to it being six games. Now, that may be my problem. I may get used to it. But again, this has been mooted for a long time, and fast fours and all the rest of it. You might as well try it out.
Yeah, give it a go. I'm not a fan either. I think the tennis scoring system is so perfect. It's so perfectly calibrated. I am really reticent about any proposals to change the scoring system. Which brings us on to sudden death juice, David, which I'm not a fan of.
No, I'm not either. And also, I don't think a lot of the doubles players who use it on the ATP circuit particularly like it. I've spoken to one or two.
Yeah, they don't. No.
And the advantage rule is another one of those.
It's a beauty.
Sort of,
a work of art.
You know, you sometimes get an eight deuce game, which is a match in itself, and you look back and
it happened several times in Singapore, didn't it?
Yeah.
In a couple of matches. Yeah.
And it's just ever increasing pressure and drama within a game. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I think it. No to that one for me. But yeah, by all means, give it a go. No service lets. For me, I don't feel that strongly about it because I don't think it has that big an impact on anything. But I do think it's an oddity, the service let.
I think that they're right to get rid of service lets, personally, because, I just feel like, crack on.
I
also think...
Yeah, John McEnroe addresses it in his first autobiography.
Yes.
Or first of how many, we don't know.
He's on
two at the moment.
Before that, he addressed it in the podcast I used to do about 10 years ago when I got him to be Commissioner McEnroe. Before Eurosport stole the idea. Borrowed it. Thought of the same thing.
He said, you know, it's like you're going, oh, you've hit the net, have another go.
Yeah,
it just seems like a really...
They also shouldn't be allowed, as he said at the time, to abort their service tosses. If you catch the ball and don't finish your serve, you lose the point, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been great for
that
Pat Raft
or
those sorry mates that we'd have lost. Each match starts 5 minutes from entry of second player onto court. I mean, yeah, I would make that 1 minute, frankly.
Yes, I would agree with you.
Or if not less.
Yeah,
you know, how long does a coin toss take?
Stu Fraser, one of our colleagues from The Times, did point out that he feels that the knock-up is a way for the crowd to just get comfortable and sort of build up
just
to the match.
Just get there 10 minutes earlier, crowd.
I feel you have all that with the introductions. The players come out, they do all that bag faffing. You know, there's plenty of it. There's the coin
you
toss.
You get a whole build-up and the atmosphere is set and then it just...
Get on with the
dissipates
match.
From,
is what
you
we're
can
saying.
Feel it just ebb away. Anyway, a visible shot clock in place to ensure 25-second rule between points. Yeah, I'm up for that. If you're going to have a rule, enforce it.
For it.
A maximum of one medical timeout per player per match.
Yeah, like it.
Yeah, fine by me. End of set coaching via headsets to coaches. We'll do this briefly because we've done
like
the on-court
that.
Coaching debate. I love it. I just think do proper on-court coaching. Why does it need to be via a weird headset in Star Wars fashion?
I quite like that. I quite like the old headset bit. But I want to hear
will
everything
that's going
on. Will
it be virtual reality?
I want to see subtitles. We've discussed this before.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yes.
They are going to be encouraged to do it in English. Which I think is a bit harsh.
But is that not... That's just handicapping those that don't speak such good English.
But
and
also,
the coaches that don't speak such good English.
I just want the subtitle system. Maybe that's not possible. I don't know. But that's what I want.
Certainly
sorted.
Possible. Fans. And the last one is fans can move around during a match, brackets, except at baselines. I mean...
Well, we'll see, won't we?
I don't know how I feel about that one.
I remember at Turbo Tennis when they did that. I didn't particularly like it, and it felt a bit manufactured, a lot of it. But then I also think at the US Open, I don't mind people wandering about the way they do. I think it's quite funny.
But there's something about that stadium that allows that to happen, yet maintain the atmosphere, isn't there? And it's the contrast between when a match catches fire, everyone suddenly stops doing that. The murmur stops. The murmur and the rustles of people eating their burgers.
And actually silence. There's something about silence that can be incredibly dramatic. Think of the silence just before the 100-metre Olympic final.
He's getting poetic.
Think about Roger Federer just walking up to the line. It's match point.
Right then. Other players have walked up to the line at match points.
Okay, all right. Other players are available.
Federer, I think, has done it more than anyone else. But, yeah. Should we talk about Jack Sock? Because he did that yesterday.
He did. And
successfully.
Yeah, we had a little argument about that, didn't we? About, you know, what that says about the state of the game.
If only we published our WhatsApp.
We do have a lot of little arguments.
Little spats.
But I think it's a really impressive achievement. I was reading something.
Hey, I didn't say it wasn't a really impressive achievement.
No, we'll go
that
on to what you said.
Fair.
But he did come
it
from something really like 24th in the race or something. He came up to get into the top eight on the last match of the season. And I mean, what a route to it. If you just wind back, I mean, Juan Martín Del Potro had got himself within a match of doing so, and in fact within just a set of doing so, when he levelled with John Isner. If he'd have won that set, he would have been there, wouldn't he? I think that,
yeah,
that would
he would
have guaranteed
done, yeah,
his
yeah,
place.
Yeah, it was all on that match.
And he ended up losing it to John Isner, who then gave himself a chance to do it all. And he lost to Filip Krajinovic, who then prompted me to ask, who is Filip Krajinovic on Twitter? Not that I didn't know who he was.
Well, number 77, 25 years of age, Serbian.
Hasn't he gone up higher?
I've seen him
now?
Play live with my own eyes, David.
Have
I saw
you?
Him play doubles with Novak Djokovic, good friend of his, in Doha a couple of years ago in the first round. I think they lost. Djokovic was just helping out a mate, I think, because he needed Djokovic's ranking to even get in the doubles. I'd be making things up if I said that he imprinted anything in particular on my memory at the time. Good backhand is what I remember.
He's had a bad
but Serbians
time
do
of
have
things.
Good backhands.
Well, yeah, certainly the ones that we're talking about. Who's that chap, Lajovic, who's
yeah.
got that single hander?
He's got a lovely backhand.
Crikey, what a gorgeous backhand he's got.
Troitsky's got a good backhand.
Yeah, 33 in the world is Krajinovic now. 33 in the world. That's how much he's jumped, even in the last week or two. So, from what I understand from people who've been telling me all about him on Twitter, he's had some really bad injuries for a start. That he was in a group of next geners 7 or 8 years ago that didn't end
the lost
up.
Gen.
You know, and you see this a lot. What was the chap's name in the next gen lineup from Italy? Quinzi.
Gianluca Quinzi.
Gianluca Quinzi. Anyway. He was a world number one junior in 2013 and was talked about in that group of young players with Kyrgios. I remember looking at him and talking to the Queen's tournament director about him and the other players winning junior Grand Slams at the time. And you're trying to work out who's going to be the one, who's going to come through. Krajinovic, he got lost, really. I mean, he was in the top 100 about 5 years ago, then he got a horrible injury, he went down to nothing, he's come all the way back, and I mean the scenes when he beat John Isner, let's not forget, didn't he beat John Isner 7-6 in the third?
7-5 in the tiebreak as well.
You know, that takes some doing.
It's when, pretty emotional.
When
yeah.
Isner, if he'd have won that match, gives himself a shot at the O2 if he'd have won the final. So Krajinovic beats him, and then his coach takes his shirt off in the crowd. That was amazing. That was awesome. I'm going to do that when I beat you.
No, you're blimmin' not. Oh, added incentive to beat David Law. Hooray. It was really emotional moment. 30, so if he has a good run in Brisbane, he could get himself, Brisbane or Doha or somewhere, he could get himself a seeding
yeah.
for the Aussie Open.
Amazing.
I mean,
but
it's
anyway,
just life-changing for
and
him,
then
isn't it?
Good old Jack Sock goes a set down against him 7-5 in the final. And that is a big moment, and it really struck me. So I think it wasn't me who came up with this, I have to say, stirred my interest in this, but it reminded me, somebody pointed out that 3 or 4 weeks ago, remember Jack Sock being given a pep talk on court that we could all hear by John McEnroe during the Labour Cup?
I do.
And the word, I mean, you know, it was pretty fruity stuff. This was after the watershed stuff from John McEnroe, and it was almost slightly comical the way McEnroe was delivering this pep talk. But when you actually listen to what he's saying, you realise McEnroe really means this. He has been watching you, Jack Sock, for 5-6 years in the commentary box on the sidelines. He's a passionate American who wants the best for other American players. I know he might give you a hard time in commentary, etc. But frankly, Jack, you deserve it, because you have underachieved to this point, is what he's saying to you. And how much longer are you going to let this go on? How much are you going to let these guys get away with this and put one over on you when you should be beating them? Don't accept it, is what he said to him.
I feel like you're giving me the pep talk.
Well, I tell
David
you,
David is just staring me
see,
down as
I feel,
he re-delivers
I feel that Jack
the McEnroe speech.
I feel that Jack Sock is a better player than he's been putting out over the last few years. I know you're not convinced that he is as good as I think he is
yeah.
in terms of talent.
Yeah, I do not want to take anything away from his achievement of winning Paris, because there were a lot of people that had, a lot of players that had a big opportunity last week and over the last couple of weeks, and they've sort of spectacularly failed to grasp it. You know, Sam Querrey and Kevin Anderson were in pole position, really, to qualify for London. Pablo Carreño-Busta, okay, it's not his preferred portion of the season, so you can perhaps forgive him a little more. But yeah, Querrey and Anderson, what happened to them? Del Potro, you cannot criticise his effort. I think he gave it everything, so I would take him out of the criticism equation. But, and he seized what was only a flicker of an opportunity, and I really give him credit for that. And I do think that could be a sign that this will be a slightly different Jack Sock. However, I don't think it's because he's become a significantly better tennis player. I think his qualifying for London, I think he is, I'm trying to think of a non-really rude way of putting it, I think he's probably one of the least good London qualifiers we've had in recent memory. I just think it doesn't reflect brilliantly. I think Janko Tipsarevic is a more talented tennis player than Jack Sock. Look, I know objective measures of how good a tennis player is.
How do you rate talent?
I know.
What is talent?
I know. And once we get into that, we are in a quagmire, David. I realise that. Trying to do an objective measure of how good somebody is.
You think Pablo Carreño-Busta is a better player than him, though, don't you?
Yeah, I do. He might not be as box office as him. I'm quite sure that the ATP are more pleased with Jack Sock qualifying than Carreño-Busta. And that's fine. You know, they want the ratings and the viewership and the spectators and all of that. And entertainment value is different to ability.
I look at the doubles game that Sock has got, though. I mean, I think he's too forehand reliant. His backhand is shocking, really, at this level. I mean,
yeah,
it's akin to what Gregor Zetskis was.
Yeah,
it is not good enough.
Which, given the dialogue, the narrative on the game in the last few years has been, you know, the elevation of the level at the top to the extent that you cannot afford to have a weakness. That used to be the case 10 or so years ago. Rzetski, an example. Roddick, an example. Though I do think his backhand is better than Jack Sock's is now.
Well, he improved his a lot.
Generally
Roddick.
Speaking, you can't afford to have a weakness. And yet here we've got Jack Sock with, as much as he has great weapons, he does have an enormous glaring weakness.
Well, he does.
He's not the fittest guy on tour
but
either.
But let's not forget Sam Stosur won the US Open with no backhand, really, to speak of, and used to be able to dominate with a kick serve and a massive forehand and great athleticism.
Used to.
Well, she did it in 2010. She won the US Open.
But she was extraordinarily fit.
She was. I would say, though, about Sock, there is a ceiling to what he can do. I don't see him winning a slam. I don't see that. I mean, Jim Courier was world number one with two slams in a year, 2 years in a row, with a massive forehand, a good serve, great
fitness.
Yeah,
my dad calls him the worst player ever to be number one.
Sorry, Jim. I think that's harsh.
Those are David Whittaker's words.
I mean,
he
won multiple Grand Slam titles. And, you know, so I wouldn't agree with him there. I mean, I don't think
he's the worst player ever to be number one.
Yeah, but
you're still in the top echelon.
He was world number one
there.
With slams as well. So you think
Marcelo Ríos was less good than Jim Courier?
Yeah, I mean, Marcelo Ríos had more racket ability than Jim Courier did, but he had worse everything else.
Yeah, I mean, look, I completely accept that you're exposing the flaw in my argument, which is
you can't
objectively judge ability, but in an attempt to, I don't think his becoming a top 8, top 10 player is because he has elevated himself to the level required. I think it's because the bar has lowered.
Look, he obviously partially,
that's the nature of tennis,
he partially has elevated his level because he's there. That having been said, he wouldn't be there if three or four players above him hadn't had to end their year early. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's just mathematical facts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're in agreement.
Sort of. Nadal did what he needed to do to guarantee himself the year-end number one and then withdrew for the tournament with knee
That's a
issues.
Shame and a concern, isn't it? Because we don't know how bad that is. He hasn't pulled out of the O2 yet, but I struggle to see how somebody who has obviously tried to wring out every last drop of potentially has physically to play in Paris last week and have to pull out in the head of the quarterfinals is going to be able to sort that out with a knee and be 100% and competing and contending
for
that title next week.
Is it about 100% with Nadal anymore, though, with his knees? His knees will never be 100%.
Most of the year, hasn't he?
He was playing without strapping last week, which he wasn't in Beijing, which I found interesting.
He's looked 100% most of the year to me.
It doesn't mean he's playing without pain.
No.
He says he's always playing with pain.
He's always talking about that, isn't he? But this is a severe blow.
And you felt
really
for the tournament as well, because I loved how little they even attempted to cover up their devastation when Federer pulled out.
They weren't happy
with that, were they? Statement was, I felt for him, but it really did make me laugh. Usually they put out sort of magnanimous statements saying, we completely understand the players. No, this one said, we're absolutely
gutted. I really feel for the Paris tournament. I feel for Guy Forget, who we know from the Champions Tour, and who's a lovely fellow and really good at everything he does. But you also got to think, well, hold on, this guy's 36. This guy has put in well over a decade now of service, 2 decades. And frankly, he can do what he wants. I feel for them, but I'm not going to criticise Roger Federer. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, it's the canister again, isn't it? And I think fundamentally he had it in his canister to play either Basel or Paris, and it's unfortunate for Paris that Basel is his home tournament. Any other player, a non-Swiss player, would favour the Masters event over the 500 in the preceding week, but Basel's his home event. He's going to play that.
Tell you what, it doesn't half make our end-of-season show in which we try to work out who is the player of the year interesting, doesn't it?
Why do we have to do that? That's a meaningless title.
We have to debate that. I'm sorry.
It's like giving someone a... I'm not, in principle, opposed to knighthoods. We don't need to go delve too deep into my political beliefs. But giving someone a knighthood for their achievements, that doesn't enhance their achievements. That's a sort of meaningless extra... It's just an acknowledgement
thereof.
So who
do you think's player of the year, then?
I think it's a meaningless title.
Why do we have the awards at the end of the year?
Do we have awards?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Tennis Podcast Awards are in the diary.
Okay. But we don't have to...
You don't have to decide it now. You can decide after the O2, but you need to have a decision.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Shall we talk about Zhuhai?
Yeah, you can if you like.
Zhuhai, the elite trophy, which is the sub, the sub-finals finals.
Surely one of the worst conceived ideas that tennis has had in a while in terms of ordering tournaments of...
The tournament's a good idea.
The tournament's fantastic.
It's just a pointless place to put
it. The consolation prize, if you didn't manage to get into the main one, is what we're saying in terms of its chronology. Look, it's a wonderfully organised event. I saw some clips from the final. There were great crowds. I think Yulia Gerges was a fantastic champion. She's won two tournaments in a row. She's won nine matches in a row. She won Moscow. I think she's one of the great stories, the good news stories and feel-good stories of 2017, who's somebody who's had a really tough few years. She went down to 50-70 in the world for the last 3 or 4 years, having been top 20 in 2012. She's back there again. She's having her best ever year right now. She's a great news story. Coco Vandeweghe, who she beat in the final, is a good news story. So it's just the wrong way around, and Steve Simon knows it. He desperately wanted to be able to reorder the tour and have it before the WTA finals, because this makes no sense whatsoever. It's like, have the climax and the crescendo to the tour, and then have this thing as well.
It just shows up, though, how just frustratingly difficult it is to make changes to a calendar. The fact that you've got... It's pretty much universally acknowledged, including by the CEO of the tour, that that tournament is in the wrong place in the calendar, and yet you'd think that would all that be all that was necessary to go, OK, well, let's move it.
Calendars.
And
it's
pretty much impossible.
Would you, if you had the chance... You've got 2 8-player draws there, round-robin both of them, Singapore, then Zhuhai. Would you combine them, have a 16-player draw and have knockout in preference?
No, I quite like the formats.
You like round-robin?
I like the two separate tournaments. I like having the runners up, the what you could have won, and the
but you just do it the other way around. Would you not like to see them 16 player knockout?
I'd quite like to see knockout. Yeah, I do have issues with round robin. Yeah,
right then. So you do want it then?
Could you not do knockouts with 8? You just wouldn't get enough matches,
no,
I guess. No,
it's not going to work, hopefully.
But 16, it's slightly less of a reward, isn't it? For, you know, 16 qualify,
then?
You feel less special.
Well, why would you have the consolation prize tournament then?
Well, no one's arguing that Zhuhai is as much of a prize as
why
Singapore.
Why have it then? Why not
because
have 16 player draw?
That's like saying why have ATP 250 events when you've got Grand Slams?
No, but if you're calling it the Tour Finals, this big thing at the end of the year that everything leads to, why not have 1 to 16 playing off rather than 9 to 16 playing off? What's the point?
Well, I don't. The point is it's just another exciting tournament, isn't it? It's, you know, why bother with anything except the Ryder Cup in golf? Because everything else is just less exciting, isn't it? Why bother?
Everybody,
the whole thing off.
You're just sort of, you're witnessing, you're eavesdropping, or you're reading quietly what we sort of exchange messages about most of the week.
We really are. Just quickly before we talk about... Very quickly, Andy Murray live, just while we're on the subject of women's tennis, the tournament director of the Brisbane event, Jeff Quinlan, said publicly this week that he's been in touch with Serena Williams' management, and they have indicated that it is, quote, highly unlikely that she will play Brisbane. Now, that does not mean necessarily that she's not going to come back for the Australian Open, but I think it puts it into a bit more doubt than previously, because I don't think she would play the Australian Open without a warm-up event, given the duration of time she's been away and the nature of her being away. And I think she'd be a lot more likely to play Brisbane than Hopman Cup, because I think she'll want, you know, competitive matches under her belt. So, look, her management company could just be being very prudent with the facts, and I can imagine that Serena will want her comeback to be spectacular and maybe an element of surprise to it, and, you know, she never does the expected, really, does she? So
no.
I don't think this is conclusive evidence, but I do think it's just an extra tick in the box of maybe we won't see her in Australia.
I'm not sure that I would read much into it personally, because I'm fairly sure, and in fact I've just been proven right by looking it up, that Serena Williams played Auckland last year.
She did, but she hated it.
She did hate it, yes. But look,
I don't think they'd even have her back.
The thing is, look,
she was so outspoken about how much she hated it.
She may not have finalised in her own mind yet what she's going to do, whether she's going to play the Australian Open yet or not. the great thing about being Serena Williams is she could probably ask half an hour before one of these tournaments starts for a wild card, and she'd probably get it.
Well, that's why they're making the inquiries, isn't it? They're saying, shall we? Do we need to keep a wild card on one side for you, or can we? I agree. I don't want to read too much into it.
I think she's going to play the Australian Open.
Do you? Yeah, David's got that gleeful little smile
on
his face.
Serena.
I think you're confused. You're doing that head not heart, heart not head thing that you put on Twitter all the time.
Well, you've been reading my pole vaults.
They are thrust into my face by the joy that is Twitter.
You could always unfollow the tennis podcast.
Andy Murray live, David. Speaking of comebacks, I mean, this isn't a comeback. Andy Murray is scheduled to make his competitive comeback in January in Brisbane. Well, actually, did it start in December? Anyway, in the new year in Brisbane. But we will get a glimpse of Andy Murray playing his annual, well, it's becoming annual now, charity exhibition event in Glasgow. This time around, he's playing Roger Federer. It was a great event last year. He played Grigor Dimitrov, and he and Jamie teamed up to play doubles. Tim Henman wore a kilt for a portion of it.
I think he's there again. Mansell Bahrami's apparently there. They're taking the whole Champions Tour up there. So, you know, can have that instead of anything
it's
else.
It's got Mansell Bahrami written all over it, hasn't it? And inevitably, what's going to happen, you're going up there, David, but all the journalists are trooping up there because they haven't had a chance to speak to Andy Murray in months, and everything he says and does is going to be read into, and we're inevitably going to see a million headlines about what fine fettle Andy Murray looked in. And that's fine. I completely understand it. We all, as British tennis journalists, you know, make a good living out of Andy Murray and reading millions of things into every single movement he makes. However, the fact is, regardless of what we see from Andy Murray live, we can't really look into any of it with any... we can't draw any real conclusions.
I think we can if he looks really ropey.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Know? I mean, if he looks like he's struggling, I think we'd be all a bit.
But hang on a second. We have a lot of experience on the Champions Tour, David, and we know how when a player's ropey in an exhibition match, a chat is had before that exhibition match, so that both players are on the same page about that ropiness.
Imagine if Federer just came out.
We know how good they are at disguising
ropiness.
Imagine
if Federer just ignored that and just went out and destroyed him.
Which has happened on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, I remember actually, I was actually partly responsible for one of those once, because back in about 1999, I remember John McEnroe playing against Mansell Bahrami in a number of matches over a course of a number of weeks.
He hates playing Mansell Bahrami.
Yeah, and I said to him, do you know, I reckon Mansell, I mean, he's a talented guy, Mansell Bahrami. I think that if Bahrami played seriously, he might even beat you one day, right? And McEnroe got so irritated by this that he refused to play along, and he went and beat Bahrami one and love. And he came up and he says, you see, told you. Anyway.
Oh, that is. I was going to tell a story about John McEnroe playing Goran Ivanišević at a Champions Tour event in Italy a few years ago, when Goran broke a string. He only brought one racket with him, broke a string on that racket, so ran out of rackets. John McEnroe refused to give him one of his rackets. Goran asked him for a spare racket to play with. John thought to himself, a win's a win, I could get the walk over here. Refused to give him a racket. Goran then ended up playing with a racket from the crowd that someone had brought along in hopes of getting signed. And then, because he was playing with a presumably rubbish racket, you know, with factory strings in probably, Goran started playing rubbish, and McEnroe started killing him. Only for about two games, because obviously they're about 20 years apart in age and all the rest of it. But he was fist pumping left, right and centre, and there's Goran stood there with basically sort of a child's racket. Anyway, Tales from the Champions Tour. We'll write a book one day, David.
Indeed. Only you and I'll read it, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll read yours, you read mine.
I think that just about wraps up the tennis week. Anything else?
No, I think that does it.
Has anyone staged any grotesquely misogynistic ceremonies whilst we've been recording?
No, apart from me.
You never know. You never know these days, but hopefully not. So we've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph.
When will we be back?
And with Eurosport. And we will be back after the draw for the World Tour Finals in London has been conducted. Now, the draw ceremony takes place on Wednesday. I think we'll leave it a couple of days after that, perhaps until after the Next Gen Finals have concluded on Friday.
What an excellent idea.
So we can look ahead to London and look back on Milan. So that's when you hear from us again. We've been the Tennis Podcast. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.